Earth Original.
Hey everyone, thanks a million for listening. If you like this podcast, the best way to support it is by doing the SRR method. Subscribe, rate, review, and tell your friends because word of mouth is a great way to spread the news. Okay, let's get down to business.
I was born with a special gift. The ability to mentally transform any situation into the worst case scenario in my own brain. My therapist calls my gift catastrophizing. And that's why I'm uniquely qualified to scrutinize and analyze history's greatest disasters and find out who's to blame. They say history repeats itself. Not on my watch. My name is Rebecca Delgado Smith, and I am the Alarmist.
Everyone, thanks for tuning into The Alarmist, a comedy podcast where we talk about history's greatest tragedies and figure out who's to blame. Today we're talking about the Jose Fernandez boat accident. A few years ago, my husband woke me up in the morning and he was weeping. And I was startled. I was like, what happened? And he said, a baseball player died. And this was the morning where we found out that Jose Fernandez had gone in a boat accident. I'm not a baseball fan, but Jose Fernandez was a Cuban baseball player, and it took place in Miami, and he was very dear to the Miami people. And so when this happened, it felt like everyone on all of my feeds all around me was devastated, and it really affected a lot of family members and friends. So I just remember being so destroyed after this accident. So let's get started. Jose Delfin Fernandez Gomez was a Cuban-born American professional baseball pitcher. He played in the major leagues for the Miami Marlins from 2013 until his death in 2016. He was well-liked, beloved by his team members, baseball fans, and the city of Miami. In the early morning hours of September 25th, 2016, the boat Fernandez was traveling on struck a jetty near Miami Beach while going over 65 miles per hour. The Marlins pitcher and two friends, Emilio Jesus Macias and Eduardo Rivero, were found dead after the boat was discovered near South Point Beach on Government Cut. The three men who were ejected from the boat during the crash died from blunt force trauma and drowning. Fans worldwide mourned his death. Fun facts, aka death stats. He was affectionately known as Nino by his teammates and fans due to the youthful exuberance with which he played the game. Nino is Spanish for the boy. Fernandez tried to defect Cuba three times but failed, and all three attempts ended in prison terms. At the age of 15, on his fourth attempt to defect, his mom fell off the boat and Fernandez jumped into the water to save her. This time, they made it to the States and eventually settled in Tampa, Florida. Fernandez, his mother, and his grandmother, whom the Marlins helped bring to the U.S. from Cuba in 2013, were practically inseparable. They were regulars at the iconic Cuban restaurant Versailles in Miami. They always sat at table 91 and usually ordered the criollo, a sampler platter. Fernandez's girlfriend was pregnant with his daughter at the time of his death. He'd announced it 5 days before. Those who died on the boat were Fernandez's friend, Eduardo Rivera. He was 25 years old. His acquaintance, Emilio Jesus Macias, was 27, and Fernandez was only 24 years old. Ah, let's all have a collective sigh. So with us today is returning guest and one of my best friends, Adam Lustig.
I'm one of your best friends?
Yeah.
Rebecca. I am proud to say, I'm so thrilled to be back. Thank you very much for having me. You bring me in for the boat stuff.
That's right. That's right.
You're the nautical expert. I'm the nautical guy.
Yeah. It's because you have glasses.
That's right. And I can see what's out at sea.
Yeah. I'm a little worried, though, because I don't want to throw you under the bus, Adam.
Toss me right under.
You are, Adam is bald.
Very.
And when you're out on a boat, you got to make sure to put sunscreen on your head.
Sunscreen and a hat.
and
both.
A hat.
I take
That's
double
right.
precaution.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sunscreen and a hat, so then I sweat and the sunscreen gets into my eyes, and which is a new problem.
Yeah.
And that's why I need the glasses. So it's all
But
connected.
That's also why you're perfect for this podcast, because I know that you use that sunscreen, and I know that you wear that hat.
I am cautious.
That's right.
I'm cautious.
So also with us is fact checker Chris Smith today.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Chris.
As always, our producer, Amanda.
Here to help.
I am.
Now, Chris, we're so lucky to have you today because you actually know a lot about baseball, as do
yeah,
you, Adam,
not,
right?
Not quite as much as Chris. I'm a baseball enthusiast. Chris is a fan. He's
yeah,
a true fan.
Yeah, a big fan.
I'm a fan and enthusiast, but I'm not a statistician, so if I get anything wrong, please write in and correct me. So I'll just take you through the career stats and try and put a little context to it.
Great.
So Jose Fernandez, he had 4 years in Major League Baseball.
Wow.
When he was 20, 21, 22, and 23. One of those years in 2014, he got Tommy John surgery, which essentially put him on the sideline for about a full year. So he kind of played a half a year in 2014 and a half year in 2015.
Yeah.
So in essence, he's sort of played 3 full years of Major League Baseball.
Can
However,
I ask, what is Tommy John surgery?
Sure. So Tommy John surgery is a very common surgery where they take out your tendon in your elbow.
Oh, it's elbow.
Elbow surgery. And this happens to pitchers a lot, right?
Well, what they do is they put in a fake sort of synthetic tendon in your elbow. And the reason is, I think it's because it's just pitching is a very unnatural motion.
Yeah.
It's like nobody should be pitching.
Throwing something that hard. Often.
Yeah, yeah. And it's named after the first guy who got it was a famous pitcher named Tommy John.
Now, he was pretty young to get Tommy John surgery, right?
Not,
he died when he was 24?
Yes, but you'd be surprised. There are a lot of pitchers are getting Tommy John surgery out of the
like
way.
Preemptive?
Yeah, that's interesting. Like getting
Do you
it done
feel
in
like
college.
That's cheating?
Well,
I mean, you're getting a robot arm.
It's a little bit of a robotic insertion.
You know what I mean?
That's like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How are we all not talking about this?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a gray area, but it's certainly not been determined as cheating by Major League Baseball. Mm,
I'll bring it to their attention.
But you bring it. We should write an email
We can call Joe Torre and get him on the line and ask him if shouldn't Tommy John surgery
first
be
I'm going to have to Google Joe Torre.
So about the stats.
Yeah.
So in those 4 years, he started 76 games. He had a 38-17 record, which is really, awesome. Really good. He had a 2.58 ERA, also excellent. His whip is 1.05, excellent. And his Ks and innings pitched is 471 innings pitched and 589 strikeouts.
Outrageous.
Which is really good.
He's striking out everybody.
It amounts to like 11.8 or something Ks per 9 innings. So if he were to pitch a full complete game, which is 9 innings, he would strike out 11
batters on average.
On
which is
average,
a lot.
Which is
a ton.
A stunning amount.
Well, so that he accomplished a lot in these 3 years.
Put it this way, he was definitely one of the most exciting young baseball players in the game by a long shot.
And how well were the Marlins doing when he was on their roster?
Not
badly.
Great.
Okay. Badly.
So let that be known that good
spot.
Good peachers.
good peachers.
Good peachers. Yeah. Won't get you wings.
Yeah.
Well, baseball is definitely a team sport.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
So thank you for that, Chris.
Also of note, and I can go into, is he was actually a halfway decent hitter in 2016, I believe he hit .250, which is like almost league average, and for pitchers, that's good.
Yeah, and he like hit home runs sometimes.
Yes.
He would like hit home runs,
hit
which
for
is
some power.
Really anomalous for a pitcher.
And not just that, but he was also a very charming and good-looking guy.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I think he was like full of Zhuzh and Verve and joie de vivre.
Well, there was this great article that I Chris hooked me up with on Yahoo Sports.
Yes, yes.
it just talked about how he was so confident, too.
Yeah.
He was a really confident guy when he got scouted. I think that he, from what I read from the article, the baseball scout was there to look at another baseball player, and he just, like, went up to them, was like, you gotta look at me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, just me, me, I'm better.
He just seemed like a big personality.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he was also kind of, and maybe you'll get into this, but he was also, like, kind of physically, wasn't he, like, six, like, I feel like he was, like, a big boy. Especially for a pitcher, I feel like he was sort of a...
6'3", 240.
That's a big guy.
He's a big boy.
Especially for a pitcher. I mean, like, that's... Yep.
All muscle, I'm assuming.
All muscle. Yeah. All muscle and charm.
He was a thoroughbred by every measure.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so a huge loss to MLB and...
And the Marlins and Miami.
I think a lot of friends... He apparently had a lot of friends. And he was very beloved.
Yes.
So let's get started figuring out who we're going to blame for this tragedy.
Yeah.
Because it's a very... difficult one. Way more complex than, you know, some of you might just think.
Yes.
So let's start by talking about the events that transpired that night. And this article is really good if you guys want to check it out. It's called The Tragic Final Night of Jose Fernandez's Life. Mm. It takes you through the night from the perspective of Will Bernal, who's a friend of one of the victims, Eddie Rivero. So Bernal steps outside. And he takes a call from his friend Rivero. Rivero's friend, Jose Fernandez, had asked him to go for a late night ride on a 32-foot fishing boat into the wee hours of Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So Jose Fernandez had played a game on Saturday night.
Wow.
And he was supposed to play on Sunday, but then found out that he was not going to start on Sunday. He was going to start on Monday. So he decided that he wanted to go on the boat that night. This sounded bad, according to Bernal. Bernal had ridden on a boat at night once. And I am also from Miami. I have ridden a boat at night.
Have
and
you?
It is one of the most terrifying things. Having done that before, I will say that on a small boat, I will say that ever since I did that, I've always been extremely aware of making sure that whoever's driving plans the time out so that you don't get stuck.
We're
out
in
there
before dark.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a really big deal because there are no, you know, think about it. There's no street lamps.
Yes.
You know, it's just pitch black and you have your little light
and
on your boat.
And that's all you got.
And that's all you got.
And the moonlight.
And you hope you have enough gas to take you back.
Exactly.
And you hope you don't get lost.
Yeah.
You know, because all of these people who are driving these boats aren't like it's not a commercial captain.
Yes.
You know, it's someone who just got a boat and a boating license and it's not that hard to get.
Yeah.
So so Bernal says that it's not a good idea. It's terrifying. It's not just the darkness, but the choppy waves from the rain earlier in the day and the threat of other boats and the objects that were obscured by the night.
Yeah.
So Bernal says, I told him it was a horrible idea. Do everything you can to get him off the boat. Do whatever you can to get him on land.
Oh.
So according to Bernal, Fernandez was upset and just wanted to get away. That's what Rivero had told Bernal. Mm. And he loved boating, so he wasn't going to judge. Bernal tried to reason with Rivero. Bernal had lost one friend already, and he didn't want to bury another, is what he said.
Man.
Surely Fernandez's gloom, Bernal said, had to be fleeting. So this is Fernandez's friend as well that they had lost recently.
Man.
So everyone was really sad about this friend who had passed. He said, both of you guys have a bright future, and whatever he's stressed about today, he won't remember a week from now. This is Bernal telling Rivero to tell Fernandez.
Sounds like his wise perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So the following that I'll read is a text exchange between Eddie Rivero and Bernal. So at 12:07... Bernal says, yo, please be careful, bro. Rivero replies, I will, bro. Bernal, a minute later, says, try to keep him close to shore if you go out. Rivero writes, trust me, it's not my time yet. Bernal says, I know, but just keep Jose cool. Tell him what I said. Rivero says, I know. Then Bernal says, turn in your Find iPhone app And then he corrects himself and he says, on. Okay. Yes. And he says, Rivero says, it's on. Then Bernal says, dale, which means go ahead, as we know from Pitbull. Dale, keep me in the loop.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, if you guys need me to meet up with you guys to cool down for support, let me know.
Sweet Bernal.
I know.
What a sweetheart.
God. So it's then it's 12:13 a.m. The text stop. Bernal says he started to track the boat and he was nervous that the dot would stop moving. So Bernal has a bad feeling about this. Around 2 a.m., it stops. And it stops at the American Social Restaurant and Bar. So it's like a it's like a bar on the along the Miami River.
Yep.
Where you can literally dock your boat.
Cool.
And whatever.
Sounds fun.
Exactly.
Yeah.
above the restaurant is Neo Vertica Condominium Building.
Okay.
And that's where Emilio Macias, he's the other victim on the boat. Mm-hmm. That's where he lived. And he was a friend of Rivero's who had never actually met Fernandez.
Okay.
So Bernal checked in with Rivero and he said that they were docking the boat and waiting for Macias to come down.
At 2 a.m.
This is 2 a.m. Which is actually kind of early for Miami
nightlife. I guess this is like the Miami nightlife thing. It's like it kicks up at 2 a.m. Yeah. It's dinner time.
You don't start, you don't leave the house till midnight.
Yeah.
You start getting ready at 11 p.m.
At 11, yeah.
You know?
2 a.m. dinner, you start, and then like the after party's from 4 to 6 a.m.
Well, yeah, and you get home at 6:30.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's and then you go to sleep until, I don't know, 2 in the afternoon, and then you repeat it all over.
Yeah.
You go to your grandma's house, you have lunch. You have some arroz siesta. Con pollo.
Yeah.
Pastelitos.
And then some pastelitos.
Yeah.
And then you do it all
you
over.
You do it all over, yeah.
So he told Bernal that everything was cool. And then around 3 a.m., Bernal stopped tracking the boat, and he fell asleep. And that was the last he heard until he woke up the next morning.
Oh. The text exchange is very haunting. It's not my time. He said it's not my time.
And
very haunting.
Just a credit to Jeff Passan, who wrote that article, which is such an incredible perspective.
Yes.
Yeah, really.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Just a really, I can't recommend this article.
Yeah. I have so many questions. It makes me think of so many things. Not least of which, like, I don't want to jump the gun here. But not least of which is like, what are the nautical traffic laws? Like, you can just take a boat out literally 24 hours a day. Like, that's...
Yeah.
Like, there's no... I guess why
it's
would
like
there
you can
be?
Drive. You can drive at any hour.
Yeah, I guess
night.
So.
It's not illegal.
But when you're driving, there are streets and there are roads and there are street signs and lampposts and traffic police. And granted, there are boat police, I guess.
Yeah, the Coast Guard.
The Coast Guard, yeah. But it's just like the... it's just dawning on me now, like, the degree to which boat travel, especially considering how dangerous it is at night, is fairly unregulated. It's just like kind of... hope for the best. Take it, whatever. Like, there's not a differentiation between small boats, big boats, motorboats. Not. It's just like a big soup of boat, and hope it works.
That is true.
It's true. I mean, whenever I go sailing with my Uncle Ray, if he's like, take the wheel, if I see a boat that's even it's like a mile away, yeah. if it's coming right at me, I start to panic.
Yeah,
where do I go?
What are the rules? Yeah.
But I think it's just like, you go to the right. Like, that's just the law.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about sailing driving boats is that common sense is important.
Critically important, yes. It seems like. Yeah.
So that can be a problem, as we know, with humanity.
Yeah, you know, yeah,
humans
common sense.
Aren't the most, don't really use that.
Yeah.
It's not taught, let's say.
Yeah, right, exactly. And like you're saying, the darkness is just like, everything is just like 8,000% more dangerous. It's like, you can't see. And yes, like you said, like your little like boat light, and that's what you got. And like maybe a floodlight on top of the boat, but
right.
man, oh man, scary, pitch black out
and
there.
And you just hope that the people know the path.
Exactly.
I think a lot of it is retracing steps. So remembering where things are, because you've probably seen them in the daylight,
yes.
and then hoping that you remember it
yeah.
when it's night. But that's it risky
just,
business.
It just seems like you're leaving so much up to, like you said, like poor flawed humans and our intuitions towards safety, which are wishy-washy at best.
Yeah.
Speedboating in Miami is an alarmist's nightmare.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's why I will never... I am not a huge fan of jet skis or wave runners.
Yeah.
It's, to me, they're the motorcycles of the ocean, obviously.
Amen.
And motorcycles are extremely dangerous.
Death wish. You have a death wish. Yeah.
And just imagine, like, someone taking a motorcycle up a notch.
Yes.
And creating a jet ski, and there are no rules.
Yes.
And there's no way to control that. It's not like there's jet ski lanes
yes.
in the ocean.
Yes.
Like a bike lane.
Right. And exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, no differentiation between size of vehicle or anything. Also, when you're driving, it's just like, and granted, I'm sure you have to get a boating license, and that requires a test, I would hope, I'm sure. But like, when you're driving, right, and if I'm like drunk, I'm like, oh, somebody take the wheel. That at least requires the steps of like, we have to pull over to the side of the road, put the car in park. We have to get up. There's like, get out and like sort of switch seats. There's a bit of like a step-by-step premeditation. It takes a few steps. Like Chris is saying, on a boat, it's almost just like, hey, grab the wheel, grab it. And all of a sudden, like an unlicensed teen can just like now all of a sudden be driving the boat, like almost in a split second. It's just like the margin for error is so great.
Well, and there are also no seatbelts.
No seatbelts.
I've never been on a boat that has a seatbelt.
Yeah.
I don't know about you.
Yeah. Just, anyway, seems real dangerous.
Okay, so I have a good idea about this and who I want to start putting up on the board. And we're going to start putting people up on the board after this quick break. So off the bat, do you want to put up maybe our just like our desire to go sailing, like humans a fascination with boating?
Yeah, like nautical curiosity at all. Yeah. But just like night, like nauticaling at night. Just
yes.
seems like just like
boating at night.
Night boating. Don't. And like, I'm all for like the Miami. You're from Miami, you know it intimately. But like this Miami nightlife, the night begins at midnight. But boats, when you mix that sort of party, sort of like partying mentality with alcohol, etc.
Yeah.
With boats are wildly dangerous.
They are. In high school, we had to take like a boating safety class.
Oh, great.
Because I think boating is such a big part of the culture in Miami.
Yeah.
And one of the big takeaways was don't drink and boat. That's like their whole like slogan.
Yes.
But I would say don't night and boat.
Yeah.
So why don't we put, and of course, we just have to. We have to put Jose Fernandez up on the board.
Yeah. I had a question for our baseball expert, Chris, if you don't mind.
Okay, go on.
Which was, so we're talking September 25th, so the regular season isn't quite over.
Right.
So are we assuming that he had like just pitched his last game?
Here's the curious thing.
Yes.
So he had maybe one, maybe two starts left to the season, probably only one.
Yes.
And the game that he was pushed back to was going to be on Monday, and that game was going to be against the Mets.
Yes.
Because the Mets were a contender, and the Marlins wanted to put up their best pitcher to pitch against the team trying to get into the playoffs, so they can try and play play spoiler.
Yes.
So that's why Mattingly said, okay, you're not pitching tomorrow on Sunday, you're pitching on Monday.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. That brings up sort of something I would like to put on the board, which would be professional sports pettiness. If the Marlins weren't so petty that they just wanted to spoil the Mets season, then they wouldn't have pushed their ace back a day, wouldn't have given him the night off. It's just like that sort of like, which is common in sports, of just like a crappy team just out of pettiness wanting to ruin a better team season.
Well, why don't we call it spoiler culture.
Spoiler culture. Spoiler culture.
Well, it sort of also plays into baseball's sort of one of these baseball's unspoken rules, which is like in baseball etiquette, it's generally like the manager will try and sort of towards the end of the year when the games get meaningless, they try and actually play hard against teams that are going into the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's for the good of the league. Mm. So it's sort of like a baseball etiquette thing.
To like season up the Mets for the playoffs? Is that the idea? That like we're going to really give you even though we're bad, we're going to give you a challenge to get you tuned up for the playoffs?
It's just so they're not a pushover the Mets.
Yeah.
And so for fairness's sake, for the rest of the league, the other teams in the league that are vying for the same playoff spot that the Mets are playing for.
Yes.
That's what they're going for.
Okay.
And not to be a hall monitor here, but I know that like professional sports is like multi-billion-dollar industry. Like Jose Fernandez's contract is probably millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Yes.
So like there's not a, forgive me, curfew situation. Like these players, like you're allowed to just like go out boat at 3 a.m.?
It's a free country situation.
So I'm Jose Fernandez. I'm like a $1 million asset to the Marlins. And also I can just like go out till all hours of the night because I'm an adult.
Okay, so let's put no curfews up on the board. Like no curfews in MLB.
I mean, I guess not.
Lack of curfew.
And maybe I've been warped by like the LeBron Jamesification of sports where it's like maybe my assumption is wrong, which is that all pro athletes are like super disciplined and like live clean and like go to sleep early and like, because to me that's what it requires to be a pro athlete, but maybe not all. Obviously not all.
Yeah.
And baseball is different because pitchers only work every once a week or whatever, so maybe the standards are a bit different.
Look,
but
we can't control if people love the nightlife.
They like that boogie. They love that nightlife. They love to boogie. And who am I to harsh his mellow? But no. Bummer.
But we should, okay, so this should be said that according to autopsy and toxicology reports obtained, Marlins pitcher Jose Fernandez had cocaine in his system and was legally drunk when he was killed in the boating accident.
Yeah.
The report from the Miami-Dade County Medical Examiner Department showed that cocaine and multiple other substances were detected in his blood. Fernandez had a blood alcohol content of 0.147, which is nearly twice the legal limit.
You're drunk.
When the boat crashed.
You're drunk, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't drink in boat.
His two friends did not, their toxicology reports show that neither was past the blood alcohol legal limit.
Interesting.
Though they did find cocaine in Rivero's blood.
Okay.
That was the friend.
Interesting. So Jose was drunkest.
He was
They were all maybe doing cocaine, or at least him and his one buddy were doing coke.
Yeah.
And Jose was the drunkest.
He was the drunkest. And the bodies, I read this on an ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
The bodies had a strong odor of alcohol on them when they were covered by the divers,
mm-hmm.
which is fascinating that alcohol, that they could smell that.
Still smell it, kind of? Yeah.
That's weird. And the investigators found evidence that the boat was speeding when it slammed into the jetty. According to search warrant affidavit, the affidavit said that officials had recovered a receipt from for alcohol from American Social, which is the bar.
Yep.
Where the trio had been there before the crash.
Yep.
And Fernandez's fingerprint and DNA were found on the steering wheel.
Sure.
And his DNA was also found on the throttle of the 32-foot vessel.
And were the other, I forget the name, Rivero and the Macias? Guy that lives above the restaurant.
Rivero Macias.
And Macias. So was their DNA also found on the wheel or at the thing?
It was determined that Fernandez was at the wheel.
Was at the wheel.
Yes.
Bummer. That's what the forensic toxicology revealed, was that he was driving.
What I recall from that article that I read was that Bernal had been with him on, he loved to go fishing at night. Hmm. I forget, there was a certain fish that he liked to fish, and it was best caught at night. So they had gone on fishing expeditions with captains, people who would lead these fishing trips, who were, you know, experienced at doing that.
Yes.
And Bernal knew that Fernandez didn't really have a lot of experience behind the wheel.
Bummer.
But he did have this boat. Now, it's unclear if he was the one who had, if it was his boat that he had purchased,
that was my next question.
It was a boat that he rented. I know that the boat's name was Caught Looking with a K.
Caught Looking. He's a pitcher. I get it. I get it.
You
caught
get it because I didn't.
With a K. Caught Looking is a term where it's a pitcher throws a pitch and the batter doesn't swing and it's a strike. And so the batter was like caught looking at the pitch. He didn't even take a swing at it. Is the idea.
Okay. Yeah. So that's very smart.
Yeah, that's very, very baseball. Witty. And maybe spelled with a K because strikeout,
because
I would assume.
Because strikeout.
Yeah,
because
K is short for strikeout.
So,
yeah.
I'm assuming it was his boat.
Sounds like it's his boat.
Yeah, it really sounds.
That feels pretty damning.
The evidence is pointing in that direction.
So Bernal knew that Jose Fernandez wasn't necessarily an experienced boat pilot.
Yeah, that's why he was like, don't go out at night.
Man, oh man.
Yeah.
Listen to your most worried friend.
Did he often go out at night on the boat? I may have missed this. Or was this kind of a first?
This was a first. He did not. I don't know if it was a first, but... I think the combination of the situation, which was that he was distraught about something. He was clearly drinking. It was late at night.
Yeah.
He was doing drugs.
Yes. It's painful to put Jose Fernandez on the blame board.
Yeah.
It's painful to do.
It is.
He is deceased. He's not here to defend himself, but he was high and wasted and driving a boat at 65 miles an hour near rocks at night. Drunk.
Yes. And we should talk about this jetty thing.
Yeah. Great word.
I read.
Great word. Really pleasing mouthfeel.
This, I'm actually familiar with this area where the accident happened. Well, it's right outside of the port of Miami.
Uh-huh.
And what it looks like are these, if you guys don't know, it's like a jetty is like, it sticks out. I guess some of them could be like docks, like long docks that stick out. But this one in particular is made out of rocks.
It's just
rocks. It's not like used for anything. But what it does is kind of like creates a lane for the cruise ships and cargo ships that are going into the port.
Okay, got it.
Now, this particular... Okay, so I'm obsessed with looking at the map and the trajectory of where the boat was looking. If you guys like Google a map of, you know, Google Maps, Port of Miami, you can listen along. So he's coming from American Social, which is on the Miami River near Brickell. So let's say like south of South Beach.
Okay.
South of the port.
Okay.
South... west of the port.
Okay.
And the boat goes east.
Okay.
It leaves the river and it has to go around the port. You know, you keep the port on the left side, and then you have to go around Fisher Island.
Yep.
And then you have to also, it's like a really wide left turn that needs to be done.
I follow you.
And these two lanes, two jetties, there's two of them. They don't end at the exact point. Mm. So the southern jetty is shorter than the northern jetty, which means that he cut past the first jetty.
Mm-hmm.
And he just assumed that the other one was just as long.
And he assumed that the other one was just as long. And if you see the photos, I mean, it's near the tip of that northern.
Bummer.
God.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like you are itching to blame uneven jetty construction. Or so, like, you know. Jetty designer.
It's called, like, the government cut.
I was wondering what that was. What does that mean?
I know it was built in like 1912. Maybe fact checker can check it out. Government cut. I think it's built 1912.
Okay.
Anyway, whatever the decision, whatever this designer, I'm sure there's a reason.
They're not the same.
But to me, it's... And if you're an inexperienced boater.
Yeah.
And you don't know that.
Yes.
You can, and that particular part of of the ocean, of the bay, it is not well lit.
I was just going to ask.
So, like the river, for instance, yes, where there's bars and night, like that you see, there's a lot of lights. But once you leave, Fisher Island is like kind of like a sleepy island. Interesting. It's like there's not a lot.
And I ask because I don't, so there's not even like, say, like a lamppost on the end of the jetty to be like, here's the end of the jetty, boaters.
There is not.
There is not.
We can talk about, okay, Rebecca. So.
You gotta put a light at the end of the jetty.
You got.
Light no the light end at the end jetty. Of the jetty. Yeah.
So, U.S. Coast Guard officials said that they were gonna examine lighting at the South Beach jetty where the boat crash happened. But ultimately, Coast Guard concluded that the existing marker along the channel flanked by the jetty at Government Cut are enough to keep it safe and navigable. The captain of the Port of Miami has determined that the existing aids that mark safe navigation through the channel, which can include color-coded lighted buoys.
Yeah, but that's...
And lighted range markers
sure.
to be sufficient.
I don't know if it is, Mr. Coast Guard. I would even go ahead and no. I would want to throw the Coast Guard up on the blame
border. Well, but this is an interesting thing. That it is stated that no commercial vessels have ever crashed on the jetties. In the past 5 years.
Got it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But so, no commercial pilot has been shit-faced out of his mind.
I want to make sure that the jetty designers are up on the board.
Come on. And
I couldn't find any jetty designers, but it was... I couldn't find any designers, but it was built in 1905.
Wow.
Okay.
It was by the U.S. Congress. It was being given to the Committee on Rivers and Harbors of the U.S. House of Representatives.
Wow.
Well, probably because it was for the port.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was for the port.
So he has to take a super wide left. He's coming from picking up his second buddy. Bernal's already fell asleep. It's the middle of the damn night.
Yeah.
So he's not really babysitting them.
It's post 3 a.m.
It's post 3 a.m.
Yeah.
Now, I just want to...
still, again, not that late in Miami.
Not that late. That's the middle of the day. That's noon. That's Miami noon.
That's the middle of the night. Night.
Yeah.
Yeah, for them.
Yeah. I do want to, and again, I don't know if you plan to get into this in more depth, but I want to sort of try to get into his psychology for a minute, like this notion of him being distraught, because I'm also putting this in context of 5 days previous, his girlfriend, they like made this announcement that she's pregnant. The season's about to end. He's a big shot pitcher. It's like, I wonder about his mentality on this night. I mean, I also like, he's also 24 years old, and 24-year-olds like go out to party at 2 a.m. And that's just like, he's a young man in Miami. So like, that's right. Part of the culture and lifestyle. But I just wonder if it was like, is this actually a celebratory boat ride? Like another season in the books and like I have a kid on the way and yeah.
I don't think it was.
No.
Based on the text messages, it looked like he was upset.
Troubled.
And there was the recent death of his buddy. And I don't know, maybe you can speak to this more than I can, but when you find out that you're pregnant, and it wasn't like they were married.
It's so stressful.
I'm assuming that it was maybe a surprise.
Interesting. Yeah, stress.
You tell me about what one might experience.
Yeah, yeah. overwhelm and worry and stress and wanting to avoid and wanting to get away.
Yeah, so
yeah,
it kind of tracks.
I can imagine. Yeah, yeah, that does track, I suppose. Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
I'm finding here that he... it was in a fight with his girlfriend.
Okay.
Oh,
and why the emotional distress.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Going to blow off some steam on the water.
You know, now that you say that, I kind of recall
man.
That reading that when it happened.
Yeah.
And this is just the first thing that came up when I Googled it. And unfortunately, it's from foxnews.com. But it does say that he was in a fight with his girlfriend that night.
Okay.
And that's why he wanted to blow off steam.
Okay. That all, this is all tracking. That all makes sense. I just had a
Although I wouldn't be quick to, you know, Fox News is trying to blame the girlfriend.
Yeah, yeah, right, right, right. That's one of their favorite tropes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So take that with a grain of salt. Yeah, I think, look, substance abuse. We know that he was intoxicated.
Yeah.
The lawyer alleged a lot of things.
Yes.
During court, he said that he was framed.
Framed? How would that, framed by the...
I don't know, framed like someone put coke in his,
Oh, like spiked one of his drinks with cocaine?
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
We can't really speculate about like his like mental
health
at the time.
Right.
But...
Just trying to get into his head about like on this particular night, a fight with a girlfriend, newly pregnant girlfriend.
Yeah. So Malin, who is our ERIO's assistant and coordinator, she... brought this to my attention. She said that, you know, maybe his defection story sounds highly traumatic, and that you have to wonder what that does to someone's psyche and coping strategies. Absolutely. As they move on through life. That is, move on through a life that is tough on anyone. Fame, spotlight at a young age, etc.
Absolutely. I actually had another thought about that, which was, so that defecting from Cuba to Florida, they tried three times in his mm-hmm. young life. Failed. Yes. The fourth time was a success. His mom went overboard. He had to rescue her. He's 15 years old, yes. rescuing his drowning mother from on this traumatic, absolutely traumatic. It also made me think, like, his experience, like, his association or his, like, relationship to, like, risky boat travel is, right. or, like, risky water travel is different than that. It's, like, a little warped or something. Like, he has sort of a, perhaps, kind of a fatalistic sort of, like, boats are life and death. Like, it's kind of like a not even a catastrophic, but just a, yeah, like numb to the dangers of right. water travel is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I it didn't say specifically how his, you know, boat traveling, defecting yeah. Cuba.
Yeah.
But what I know from people who I know yes. who have gone through this yeah. and just like is that. It's a dangerous boat ride.
Yeah.
A lot of people die
yeah.
leaving Cuba. And we should explain to our listeners, like, the reason Cubans, you know, of Cuba, communist country, a lot of poverty, a lot of problems, not a lot of freedoms. And
chance for upward mobility in yes, any way. Yeah.
There's a people, you know, have are dying to get, literally dying yeah. to get out.
Right.
And so they'll create, you know, you're lucky if you have a boat.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, they come on rafts,
yeah.
they come on whatever they can find.
Right.
And the idea is that there's this, we have this wet foot, dry foot policy. So the goal is to make it to land. And if you touch American soil, then you are given asylum.
Yes.
But if you're caught on the water by the Coast Guard, then you're brought back to Cuba. And this is what I'm assuming happened those first
Got
three
it.
Times. Because when they catch you, they return you. And of course, the Cuban government puts you in prison.
Right.
And all of these three times that he defected were under, he was under the age of 15.
He's a child.
Because the fourth time that he succeeded.
He's 15.
He's 15.
He's a child. Yeah. To me, it just like skew, like, again, I'm like putting the psychological pieces together. It just seems like that would just skew and warp your sense of danger, especially as it relates, particularly as it relates to like water danger, like
yeah.
water travel or something.
So can we put his, I mean, we could blame Castro.
Yeah. But truly, though, it's just like the sort of the unfortunate migration mechanism that exists from this Cuba to Florida, you know,
yeah.
That dangerous journey, that dangerous pathway.
What are we going to put on the board here? Because I'm, of course, I'm dying to put Castro up just for personal
Toss
reasons.
Toss him up there. Toss him up there. Pin him to the wall. Let's get him. Now's the time. Let's get him.
But well, we can also put his trauma, like his, Jose Fernandez's, like, trauma, you know.
Migration trauma.
Migration trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't have Castro and his brand of socialism.
Communism.
You might have a better relationship with America, and there might be a safer passage for
exactly.
players to come into Cuba. Like, for example, in the Dominican Republic, there's a whole system where MLB has a whole sort of farm system in the Dominican Republic, and there are all kinds of regulations and
right.
and it is regulated.
And you're saying that this is connected to him wanting to be a baseball player trying to come here.
Yes, I'm talking about baseball players.
I guess that was what his goal was. He started playing baseball in Cuba. So
yeah.
he would have wanted to give himself the best opportunity as a player.
Exactly.
And that's why maybe he took that risk.
Yeah.
For sure.
Totally. And you can also blame, in a way, America's like foreign policy position on mm-hmm. Cuba.
Absolutely.
Like, why don't we allow for sort of like... I don't know what you would call that, but just like more free travel
yeah.
and trade.
I think you could blame lingering Cold War resentment. Just like lingering resentment from the Cold War from the 50s. You know what I mean? Of like why we're so sticky about Cuba. Why we're like...
Let's blame Kennedy.
Yeah.
Blame
Kennedy.
Well, what do we have on the board in this past
yeah,
section?
Yeah, let's
Did we put Castro
this.
Up?
So
Rebecca, as a personal
I
vendetta.
I just want to make yeah. sure we put Castro fast, Noah.
Okay, there's definitely, so far on the board, for sure, there is night boating, Jose Fernandez, Castro. And now there's a couple of mentions that I haven't officially put up. I want to go through these with you. So one is no curfew, which to me is a little watered down.
Yeah, it's okay, a little watered
I'm
down.
Just gonna
we can skip that one.
Now there's Jetty Designers, which is very specific. And I might suggest expanding that one maybe to like the city of Miami.
Yeah.
Or like, 'cause whose responsibility is that?
Like, yeah, right.
I don't know.
Some municipal, like, whatever that, like, yeah, exactly, like the Department of, like, Fish and Wildlife, whatever.
Yes, it is. It's the, well, it's the U.S. Coast Guard. They're the ones who are, would be doing the examining of the jetty.
But I say for that, like, it's the Coast Guard represents the jetty design to me.
I'm with you there.
Then let's put that.
I'm with you.
And they're the ones who are saying it's safe.
Right.
Which clearly it is because...
But he was going to find a way to crash that... Boat,
maybe so.
It seems to me.
Yes.
Like, it just seems like he was out to self-destruct.
You think so? You think it was a suicide?
I don't think it was a suicide. I just think he was... That every step of his... Every decision he made that night was heading toward self-destruction. And people around him seemed to have known that.
Well, and Bernal, what about this? Did. What about this? And I mean, you know me. I'm always for this. It's the When people are, okay, this is what I'm for. Alarmism.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. We're okay. All for that here. Yeah,
and I read this in the article that Rivero was, the reason he knew Fernandez was because his girlfriend was friends with Fernandez's girlfriend.
Okay.
And Rivero, it was not a wealthy guy.
Right.
He had just started a job at Carnival Cruise Lines.
Cool.
Which, you know, a lot of people that I know, it's not a super well paying job, but, you know, very respectable in Miami.
Yep.
And so he's very working class.
Yeah.
So my point is, he's friends with this guy who's got more fame, and it's this
enablers.
Yes, man.
Absolutely.
Enablers. And you can tell that Rivero wanted to do something,
but
maybe he just didn't feel like he was in a position to stop him.
Yes.
And that is so devastating.
It's tragic. Yeah, it is. And I think you're right. Like, pro... And I guess this is what... I'm not angling in any way to put... All I meant by the curfew was... I'll just relay one quick anecdote. Like, these... About how, like, protected I imagine some of these athletes are. I went to NBA Summer League one year, which is like in between seasons, all the pro basketball players, especially the rookies and like the young 19, 20, 21 year olds go to like play. And this is a few years ago, and like the number one draft pick, like the Jose Fernandez of the NBA this year, was this guy Karl Anthony Towns, and he was at the Summer Leagues in Vegas every year. Vegas, which is, you know, like the Miami of the West. Yeah. And like he is in Vegas, and we're there watching all the games, and we were at one of the casinos late at night, and he's 19, the number one pick in the draft, just signed like a $200 million contract, and we saw him in the casino of the Caesar's Palace or whatever it was, and he was literally sandwiched, he's 7 feet tall. He was literally physically sandwiched between his mother and his agent were sitting on either side. And the energy was like, you're not going anywhere. Like, you are your career is just beginning. You're not, if you think we're going to let you go out and like gamble and like party in Vegas, you're mad. You are like our family's generational wealth.
Right.
Like, you're insane. You're insane if you think like, so just like, I guess that is just my standard for like the way that athletes are protected as, sorry to say, as like assets, if for no other, like, to put it in like cold-blooded capitalist terms as assets. So just the fact that Jose Fernandez is, and the Marlins weren't more protective, and there's only so much you can do. He's an adult human being in the world. He's going to go out and drink at 2 a.m. if he wants. But still, that was my only point with the curfew.
My argument to that would be that when people do that, when they try and hold on tightly, right, that only creates the desire for these people to then really let loose.
What is that forbidden fruit?
Exactly.
Totally.
It's like when you're raising a child, right?
Totally.
I don't know. I've never raised one, but those are my instincts.
Yeah. No, you're totally right. That's all I wanted to say, just like that the Marlins weren't, not that players need chaperones, but just like, I don't know, in the modern day and age with the contracts as big as they are, it's like these are huge investments, if for no other reason, if in like the most impersonal, most dollar signy way. These are like, Jose Fernandez was a $100 million investment for the Marlins, and just let him go out.
I wonder if they had insurance on him.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I mean, that's all they really care about is their money. Right. I mean, that's a cynical right. take.
Of course, but yeah.
I'm sure there is insurance in place for yeah. when they sign contracts.
Yeah. 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 You're probably right. Yeah.
It's interesting because, like, I don't know a lot about professional athletes or sports, but there is a culture of, like, you're taking these young people who aren't necessarily equipped with the emotional tools to handle all of this money,
overnight.
All of this attention, all of this success. So you do have an obligation, I think, to be concerned with their mental health as well as their physical health.
And absolutely.
I don't know if this comes up a lot in the conversation around professional sports, but, like, in my mind, you see a lot of athletes who kind of self-destruct or spiral out.
Completely.
Like, right? Is that...
Yes.
Yeah.
And not only is it not a part of the culture of professional sports, but I'll bet you if you look into it, and I don't have any evidence to back this up, but the people at the top of the food chain actually prefer athletes who are not looking after their mental health
Definitely.
And balance within their life. They just want people who are 100% dedicated to the sport, willing to put their bodies on the line in the name of, like, you know, winning.
Well, I that is just, like, disgusting, and it gave me an idea for something that I want to put up on the board.
Great.
Lack of mental counseling.
Definitely.
In sports.
Absolutely.
In sports. Okay.
I feel like we are right now in 2019 a bit at a precipice for, like, mental health in pro sports. Yep. I think that it's changing a bit. And, like, what Chris was just saying about professional organizations and teams wanting the more reckless players, that's particularly true, less so in baseball, super true in football, where it's like, you know, concussions are a danger,
right.
CTE is a danger, these players are putting their health on the line, and at these rookie, like, combines or whatever, where they're, like, scouting the new young players, they deliberately, I just read an article about it, they deliberately are looking for players who show no inclination towards skepticism about the NFL,
Gross.
And who will just throw themselves into it full force, don't have kids to live for example, and, like, the NFL much more than baseball, but, like, I think that attitude is pervasive in sports that like, just echoing what Chris said, they want players who will full throttle commit to the sport.
So, absolutely gross.
Totally gross.
It just makes my hair stand up.
Yeah,
and
if I had hair, it'd be standing up.
It's on the board. So we have now five really good, and I think lack of mental health resources in professional sports kind of encompasses the curfew idea,
Adam, that you're
talking about.
Amen.
So is there a lot more, Rebecca?
No,
to go over?
I think I just want to make sure that maybe we put Miami nightlife, just that culture of, like, party.
He likes to boogie.
Now they like to boogie, and I respect the boogie.
So do I.
I mean,
hey, Rebecca.
No one likes to boogie more than us.
I know, well, that's true.
I found a quote in the Miami New Times.
Yes.
It was from Hannah Centenac, and she says, quote, "Miami is a town that's all about the booze. Our idea of a fun night out is bar hopping, shot taking, and beer chugging. There's no better neighborhood to get our collective drink on than the party epicenter of the universe, South Beach."
There you go.
And she goes on to recommend the top 10 bars and restaurants to hang out in Miami.
So. But, like, that's really how they have fun. It's not like, you know, I'm from there, and maybe I always felt a little bit left out because, don't get me wrong, again, I love to
boogie. You love
boogie.
To boogie, Rebecca. I
love
boogie
it.
With you.
But a part of me was like, is it too much boogie?
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When is it too much?
Yeah.
And I have found that the culture in LA, again, some people do like to boogie really late over here.
Yes.
But it's bars do close at 4 o'clock.
Different.
I'm sorry, 2 a.m.
2 a.m. It's different.
And also the it's okay to have a game night.
Right.
Like in Miami.
It's like game night. You
it's
talking
odd.
About? Yeah.
I mean, look, you can find your people.
Do you mean game night? Like you stay in and just
yeah,
play
like
games
just
with...
have a game night. Yes. Clearly, that's what I like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. You're a real Miami outlier in that way. Yeah, yeah. It's like it can go too far, and too far is speeding at 70 miles an hour on a speedboat at 3 a.m. high on cocaine.
Yeah,
that's wow. That's when
so,
it goes too far.
Miami nightlife culture
for sure.
And the last thing I wanted to say, and I don't even know if we can blame him, but the Don Mattingly aspect.
He was the manager.
He was the manager, and he was the one who decided not to play him on Sunday, move him to Monday. And I think he's like, he still beats himself up over
you think?
It, right?
Yeah, that's the kind of thing that everyone around Don Mattingly tells himself that there's absolutely no way he could possibly blame himself. So in, I think I just want to nip that in the bud because I know I put that up there, but I couldn't imagine that you can't. I mean,
there's no way. There's just no way.
Yeah.
But it does go with the spoiler culture, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
but of course, again, there's no way he could have predicted that, you know, that was going to spiral, you know.
Of course.
It was the turn of events.
Yes.
So, okay, we're not putting that up. Okay. So I feel really good about this list.
Same.
And I'll read it out for everyone just to remind them.
Great.
We've got Night Boating. We've got Jose Fernandez himself.
Yeah.
We got Castro up on the board. Woohoo. we've got the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
We have a lack of mental health resources in professional sports. And Miami nightlife.
Yeah.
So these are our six.
A lot of good suspects.
Yeah, a lot of good suspects.
Really good ones.
I'm already having a hard time thinking of what I'm going to cross off first.
Look, I just want to address the kind of elephant on the list, which is Jose Fernandez himself. And it's like, he did drugs, he did cocaine, he was way drunk, he went out boating at night against some sort of like gentle warnings from friends and confidants. It's like, there's a bit of like a don't miss the forest for the trees, like Occam's razor, what's the most obvious answer? And like, Jose Fernandez is a little bit, to me, with all due respect to the deceased, is like the obvious.
Well, there was a lawsuit that, and it was taken to court, and he was found guilty. They did say was that had he lived, he would have faced criminal charges because he did kill two people. I mean, if you're driving under the influence like a car and you kill someone, you get tried for manslaughter.
Yes,
you know,
right, exactly.
So legally, he was found. He was already found responsible.
Yeah,
legally he was found responsible.
Yes, I mean, so like, there's an obviousness to it.
So you're saying we have to keep him up on the board for now.
In fairness, the alarmist court kind of supersedes the American
100%.
Courts.
Oh, for sure.
So we do not have to defer.
For sure,
we take. Laws the mean American, nothing here. Justice system into consideration. Yes,
it's but a piece of the mosaic. It's a piece of the pie. It is in no way the dictating force whatsoever. I just wanted to throw that out there and say, like, I am thirsty and curious for a less obvious. But well,
Adam, as you know, here we do a process of elimination.
That's right.
It's tried and true. It never lets us down.
You have 100% success rate. You've nailed every single blamey so far.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
the people in our jail or the things in our jail.
They deserve to be there.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
I would never question it.
So what are we going to cross off first?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Night boating? That's the only one I can think of to first attack.
Yeah, because night boating to me could fall a little bit under Miami nightlife. To me, is a little bit more of an umbrella,
right,
thing that night boating can sort of be a subset of.
Because people party on boats.
Party on boats.
Right. That's a common thing.
Boats are for partying.
And travel and cargo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And travel and cargo.
Yeah.
Yeah, and much more practical things than drinking and cocaine. But I would just say night boating, to me, I am inclined to cross it off because to me, Miami nightlife sort of scratches that itch for me.
And let's just be honest, like commercial boaters or boating or whatever.
Yes.
They have a pretty successful.
They weren't crashing into it.
No.
Like for 5 years, it was safe going. So
yeah. So we're taking off night boating.
Goodbye, night boating. I know you have a vendetta against Fidel Castro.
Yes.
Cuban.
You have to make a really good argument.
Going here. No. Okay. Look, we're going down the list. I just want to explore this together
as a
family. I want to talk about this together. So. Castro is right now the proxy for the difficulty, the reason that it is so fraught for, and the creating circumstances and unlivable conditions that make it attractive for people to risk their lives, literally risk their literal lives to defect from Cuba and come to most likely Miami. I mean, yes, that is, I think he plays a huge part of it.
And also the trauma. That he was then forced to experience.
Yes. The generational trauma, too.
And like you said, the boat, like being calloused of this boating.
Boating danger. What like nautical danger means for Jose Fernandez was like kind of maybe warped.
So that goes under Castro still.
Castro. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The look in your eye is frightening to me right now. The way that. I dare not cross Castor off the list. Yeah.
So maybe though we do go into the Miami nightlife because I do know a lot of people who enjoy the boogie.
Yeah.
And they're not getting home safe.
They're not getting in fatal boat accidents.
No.
Yeah. You know? I don't think we can blame the blaming the shoes for the fault of the feet kind of thing. I don't think that we can blame Miami nightlife. Jose Fernandez to me bears much more, obviously, responsibility. Yes. He's the one that imbibed the alcohol. He's doing the drugs. Plenty of people are out boogieing all night long, not dying.
It's like plenty of people take advantage of Senior Frog's 2-for-1.
Exactly.
And don't end up, you know.
Yeah, and they take a lift to and fro.
Take a lift, Jose.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Take a boat lift. Now that's an idea.
Now that is a million-dollar idea.
Now that's an idea.
But for real, though. Could save a lot of lives.
So we now have 4 on the board. We've got Jose Fernandez himself, Castro, the Coast Guard, and a lack of mental health resources.
Yes. Well, let's talk about the Coast Guard for a second, because we're talking about the Coast Guard in terms of sufficient lighting the jetties, making the jetties uneven, whether that was intentional or not. Yeah. So we're talking about like nautical laws and safety and like making it more user friendly, for lack of a better word. I'm going to have to sort of point to this thing of like not, you know, I mean, I don't know what the stats are in terms of like how many boat crashes and boat accidents there are per year or whatever.
I read that there were in the last 5 years, there were 20. 2 of them were on the jetty.
Okay.
Others were non-related to the jetty.
Okay.
And none of the 2 that crashed into the jetty were commercial.
It was just people on their private boats.
Yes. I would say, and I'm pretty sure none of the other ones either.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I'm with you. I think that the Coast Guard, while it's their job, and I honestly, I'm like, why wouldn't you just put more lights out there?
Put more lights.
You know? It just seems dumb.
A few hard-headed. Iridescent buoys is seems
enough.
A little flimsy
but
to me.
But again, the stats are not there.
Yeah.
We can't blame the Coast Guard.
Goodbye, Coast Guard. I feel good about these final 3, to be really real with you.
Jose Fernandez, Castro, and lack of mental health resources in professional sports.
Look, I want to lean on that because I know we're eliminating right now, but I just want to signal that the lack of mental health resources in professional sports, to me, as Amanda said, just sort of does encompass this kind of like, who's looking after him?
Yeah.
Who's looking after this young, rich man who is fighting with his girlfriend, who's about to be a dad, who has a lot going on in his life? He's rich and he's young and he likes to party and he's charismatic and he's worth $250 million, however what his contract is. Who's looking out? Who is looking out for his physical and mental safety?
Apparently, like, Rivero.
Exactly. And
Bernal.
Just by the grace of some good Samaritan friends who are texting about it. Like, where are the Marlins? Not that they are responsible, but like.
You almost want to put out. It's almost like instead of putting someone in a jail like a Castro or a Jose Fernandez, you almost want to put out a big old bat signal for asking our professional sports to just mandate mental health help for these young athletes that are having dump trucks of money being poured
my mind, it's just changing the culture, right? It's like having counselors available,
yes,
and changing the stigma of seeking a counselor,
absolutely,
or talking about your feelings,
no doubt.
And I think that there's a as a society and as an organization, there's a bit of a responsibility that should be held. You know, they need
for
to
sure.
take responsibility when it comes to that.
For sure. The NBA right now, like I said, I believe that we are at a bit of a, like, this feels a little topical because right now the NBA, who is traditionally has the reputation of being sort of on the bleeding, on the razor's edge of like progressive things. I think just Adam Silver, the commissioner, anointed like a mental health whatever you want to call it, like an mental health person officially sanctioned by the NBA, and every team has a therapist, and that's part of it. Because, like, again, the youth cannot be understated. Like, and like the, like Amanda was saying before, the overnightness of the extreme wealth is really intense.
Right.
Really, really intense.
Young and rich, baby.
Young and rich, baby. And like, and this isn't the same because, but like, you have another sports tragedy that Aaron Hernandez from the Patriots said, like, a lot of these guys are coming from, like, you know, people who come from like gang culture, all of a sudden have money overnight, and like, well, now they have money, but they can't escape the gang.
He's coming from communism.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. You
know what I mean? He's seeing money, and he's being able to make choices for himself for the first time.
Man,
so
that Castro's looking a little juicier to me right now, to be honest with you. Just like, all roads do lead back to like growing up under a communist regime, and like all the sort of secondary trauma that comes from that.
Again,
yes.
Had there been like someone he could speak to, like, there are a lot of people who have fled Castro and fled communism, and you know, maybe they're not in the circumstance of Jose Fernandez, where you're, a famous athlete, a
pitching phenom.
So maybe that helps to kind of keep you grounded. I really do feel like I've kind of made up my mind.
You have already. Yeah.
And as much as I do, I understand that Jose Fernandez is literally at fault.
Quite literally. Yes.
I don't think I can blame him in this scenario.
Yes.
And as much as I want to blame Castro,
we know you
again,
do.
There are people who have been, you know,
yep.
Who a lot of people are dealing with this, and we're not all driving a boat.
Boats into jetties.
You know.
Yes.
So I would like to put mental health resources or the lack of mental health in the professionals.
I have to tell you, Rebecca, as a fellow alarmist, I'm right with you. And that is actually where my gut is also leading me. I don't know what you think, Chris, but that's also my hunch.
I think
somebody's got to grab those keys and open up that jail cell and make sure everybody turns around and faces the wall, because they've got a new prisoner in there.
Okay, then it is settled.
The prisoner is
the idea of mental health.
Wait for it, because I'm going to send him. I'm assuming it's a man, I guess?
In the
male tense. Okay. Lack of mental health resources in professional sports, you're going to the alarmist jail.
I also wanted to just end a little on a quote that this whole sequence reminded me of. It's from one of my favorite writers, James L. Brooks, from the movie How Do You Know? And it's a quote from the character Lisa, who says, "Never drink to feel better, only drink to feel even better."
I love that quote.
Nice.
That got me.
Amanda, you're crying. Are you okay?
I never thought about it like that. Well, Adam, thank you so much for joining us today. And I also wanted to make sure that our listeners know about your podcast. Why don't you tell them?
Yes. All of our friend Billy and myself host a podcast called The No Joke Podcast on Twitter at No Joke Pod. Please give a listen. We have yet to talk about Jose Fernandez, but maybe we will. Or Castro. Yeah. He rarely comes up.
I'll come on and talk about Castro.
That sounds perfect.
No problem.
Yeah, great. Thank you for having me. This is a real treat. Next time you have a nautical-based tragedy, I insist that you call me.
You know I will. After the accident, the Marlins retired Fernandez's number 16 so that no other Marlin could ever wear the number. The Marlins were initially planning to put up a statue of Jose Fernandez, but the narrative soured when the toxicology report was released and it seemed like he was to blame. In February 2017, the families of Eduardo Rivero and Emilio Jesus Macias sued Fernandez's estate for $2 million each, claiming negligence and personal injury. The lawsuit was settled on July 31st, 2018 for an undisclosed amount. Vote for who you think is to blame by going on thealarmistpodcast.com and write in and let us know all of your thoughts at thealarmistpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram @thealarmistpodcast and Twitter @alarmistthe. That took a turn, didn't it? Thank you so much. Tune in next week as we'll be placing blame on the sexy but tragic crime spree of Bonnie and Clyde.
Earios. powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.